Blog Talk Radio.
Are you ready for more propaganda? Well, you're in the wrong place at the right time. Columbo Chronicles is for critical thinkers. Let's welcome the consumer advocate for justice. Here's the Rose, Rose Columbo.
Hi, everyone. It is the Rose, Rose Columbo, God willing, here every Wednesday just for you. And you can go on the World Wide Web and listen anywhere. So check the time in your area and be sure to check the follow and like buttons because you will get notified and reminded that an important topic is coming up with a prominent guest. Sometimes I do commentary, but mostly there's prominent guests from the majority are from America. But then again, we're welcome and honored to have guests from time to time from around the world. And I've been doing this a long time on AM FM radio, starting off with Wake Up America is the American Dream on the verge of the American Nightmare. Well, some people think it is, and a lot of people around the world think it is. So many things going on. But, you know, we have to think positive. We have to start getting back to looking up at the sky and the heavens and the rainbows and the stars and the universe and looking around at the butterflies and the trees and the birds and the oxygen and the fresh air that God breathed into Adam and Eve's lungs and into ours so that we can live above the ground and enjoy the things that he created in the universe. For you and for me and for the entire world. So what I do as an advocate for justice is I actually watch for injustices and corruption for a long time now. And I've actually been a firsthand experienced person and litigant many times in the legal system. So I didn't have a pity party except by myself sometimes, but I decided that I would be a voice for America, and that has been going on for about 30 years now, and still young, though. We just don't look at age. We look at, hey, it's time. We have to be more concerned about, because if we keep ourselves healthy and we keep our minds active and we try to make this a better world by doing something in our community or in our county, in our state, and do something positive for our children, grandchildren, and future generations, hey, we just might have a peaceful world coming up. And speaking of that, I have a very special guest for you today, and he's a returning guest, and I just love having Bill Muckler on our show, because Bill Muckler is a author, and he has a wonderful background that I will explain to you in just a couple of minutes. So let's take a break and let's get started and listen to this very important message.
Obamasaurus, the new book by Rose M. Colombo, is an updated version of a political satire that reflects the political roadmap of today's world, written with an Orwellian twist. Will humanity survive or suffer depopulation or extinction? Obamasaurus by Rose M. Colombo, available at Amazon.com.
That's right. It's available at Amazon.com. And it's also Barnes & Noble. You can order it from Barnes & Noble. And, you know, you can also get an autographed copy by going to Rose-Columbo, C-O-L-O-M-B-O.com. And, check out the other books that I've written, such as Fight Back Legal Abuse. And that book is coming out in its second version. It went global, and it's going to be upgraded because corruption and injustices have increased since I've written that book. And that's interesting to me. So it caused me to write another book for all of you who missed the first copy. That appeared in newspapers, in the Daily Law Journal, Veterans Newspaper, the Asian Journal, and the Kyoto Award-winning Journal of the think it's called the Journal of Culture, and I don't remember the other title, but it is a beautiful book that actually goes into museums. So I'm very honored, and I'll catch that name in my files here and let you know what it was. Sorry about that. But anyway, we're all human, you know, brain's so clogged up with so much information that it gets difficult sometimes. But here, if you are in Arizona, before we enter into the world of authors and experts, I want you to go to the Horseshoe Cafe, which my sister owns, and I want you to get her homemade apple pie after you have your homemade cooked meal and your cold drink right between Sierra Vista, Tucson, Phoenix, Tombstone, Sierra Vista. So any of those cities you're traveling to, this 100-year-old landmark is the place to go.
Howdy, folks. Just stopped in by my favorite restaurant, the Horseshoe Cafe. I highly recommend the home-cooked hot meals and piping hot coffee. In fact, it reminds me of my mom's home cooking when I was growing up. The customer service is excellent. Be sure to save room for the world's best desserts. Make sure you try a slice of fresh homemade pie. The Horseshoe Cafe is located at 154 East 4th Street in the heart of Benson, Arizona. The Horseshoe Cafe is right outside of Tombstone, Sierra Vista, and Tucson. Sometimes Patty and Mike stop by to welcome you. The staff at the Horseshoe Cafe looks forward to seeing you. Stop by to eat or relax. Cool down in the desert with a cold beer or your favorite cocktail. That's the Horseshoe Cafe. Oh, and don't tell anyone I told you, but some people think it's haunted. One thing is for sure. Be sure to bring your appetite.
Columbo Chronicles Live. Columbo is on their trail. Listen up at Columbo Chronicles Live.
That's right. We're live. We're above the ground, and we are going to enter into the world of authors and experts with our wonderful returning guest, Bill Muckler. Let me tell you, his last name is spelled M, like with Mary, M-U-C-K-L-E-R, if you want to look Bill Muckler up on the internet or on Amazon.com, because he wrote the book, 2020 Vision, A Clear Vision for America. And let me tell you a little bit about his background, and then we'll ask him more about it, but this will answer your question why he wrote this book. Bill Muckler was born and raised in St. Louis, Missouri. He attended the same parochial school, just like me, parochial school, for 9 years and graduated from Christian Brothers College High School, Army Junior ROTC School in St. Louis. Bill graduated from the University of Missouri Columbia with a BA in psychology and a personnel manager, with 2 years in the Air Force ROTC. After graduation, he dodged both the draft and jury duty to enter the United States Marine Corps Officer Candidate Course in Quantico, Virginia. He was commissioned a second lieutenant and spent 4.5 years on active duty and 11 years as a ready reservist as an officer of the Marine Corps. He holds a permanent rank of captain and held the top secret security clearance. So I can't wait to talk to Bill again. Bill Muckler. So I'm going to just zoom right into authors and experts and welcome Bill. Hi, Bill. How are you doing today?
Good afternoon, Rose, and thanks for the opportunity to be able to chat about America with you again.
Oh, it's always a pleasure because, you know, Bill, it doesn't matter how many times we chat. There's more injustices and corruptions that pop up, or just human interest stories that affect all of our lives that maybe we need to take a look at, and but we can't keep up with everything. So it's a good thing to bring people with knowledge and concern about our country and the world and who have experience, especially in the military, with these issues. Did I miss anything on your background you would like to share, Bill?
No, not at all. In fact, that was very, very thorough. If I could start off with saying something, being an author, I don't know if I'm really an author or not. I've written a few books, but Rose is the one who's really the author. I've read every one of her books, and she does an outstanding job. So, Rose, I'm sure all your listeners are also avid readers of yours as well.
Well, thank you for that. I appreciate it very much. You know how difficult it is for authors to get the word out, you know, and they can't brag about themselves. That is not being humble, even if you're trying to get the word out. But I know you read America Under Martial Law, and I really want to appreciate your kind words about that book. Having been in the military, that meant a lot to me.
Yeah. Somebody asked me, how many books have you sold? And I said, I don't know. And they said, what do you mean you don't know? I said, well, there's so many different venues and places, e-books and so forth, that you never really know. But every month I get checks from different places, and a check might be $2.18, or it might be $17.53, or, you know, whatever. But you have no idea if that was for 10 books or 20 books or one book or whatever. So, and then I sell them on my own webpage myself. People contact me through Facebook or social media and email and so forth. But so we got talking about that, and they said, well, how many think you really sold? And I said, I have no idea. I said, but if everyone who told me that they wanted to read my book and were going to buy my book had actually bought it, I'd be a runaway New York Books, top seller or whatever, a number one seller on the New York Times list, because everybody says they're going to do it, but not that many really do.
Well, you know, because they're on the internet now and they're trained to just read the titles and a little bit of the blurb, the subtitle, and then they think they know the whole story, and they don't get the meat of the story. They only get the sizzle. And so that's how our lives are now, where people like authors who really care about America and really tell people how they need to protect themselves and their families and how to protect our country from being overthrown and turn into an overnight communist nation, which has happened in other countries. Suddenly you no longer have freedom, liberty, and rights. And people who have been on the front lines like you and me, we know that can happen. That's why I wrote Obamasaurus. Obamasaurus is about how the Judeo-Christian nation was depopulated or made extinct. And since the lockdowns bill, we know, and there are even mainstream media, even CBS and NBC stations are now asking, why are so many young people suddenly dropping dead in our country? I'm so happy that they're doing that and waking up, because we were trying to tell people, you know, you need to ask questions about experiments and trials and secret trade formulas before they jab you. You know, but, you know, well, we won't even go there. So let's go to 2020 Vision, A Clear Vision for America. Tell me why you wrote the book. Tell our audience why you wrote the book. I know why you wrote the book. Tell our audience why you wrote the book. And because we always have new listeners and they don't know why, Bill.
Yeah. Okay, well, thank you. That's a good way to get started into it. I guess sometime, maybe 30 years or more ago, I was working as a consultant, and I work with a team of people, and we would always be talking about various issues like music or movies or sports or politics or religion or whatever. And I always had some pretty opinions about how our country works, and as a consultant, I was a work management process consultant, so I was always interested in how things work. And I would say, the education in our country is going downhill. You know, it's deteriorating. And here's why, you know, and people would say, how do you know that? And I said, well, I read and I just try and figure out, you know, how things work. So they said, why don't you write all this stuff down? Quit telling us everything. Just write it all down. So finally I thought, okay, I guess I'd better write it. So in 2014, I really got serious about it. I guess I got serious about it a little bit before then, but I really started writing. And what I did is I listed out 37 of the most serious issues that the political establishment has imposed upon we the people. And so then I thought, well, how am I going to write all these things? So then I started ranking them, and I thought, okay, here's the five that really affect the people most, and here's the five that affect this lesson. So I got down to 20. And that's why the book is 2020. So there's 20 chapters, and each chapter talks about one of the things that the political establishment has imposed upon the people that are doing wrong. So, for example, I have a chapter on budgeting, and I have a way of budgeting that we don't do in this country anymore. I don't think the last budget that we really passed was back around 2011. What we hear now is everything is about continuing resolutions. And so, for example, right now we're going to have a battle over the debt limit. Well, we wouldn't have that if we had a budget and then the budget, controlled our deficit. Unfortunately, most of the people in Congress, the 435, don't even know the difference between the deficit and the national debt. And they don't realize our national debt is $31 plus trillion dollars in mounting. And this is something I wrote about way back in 2014 when I did the original research on this. I talked about how our interest payment was going to destroy our economy. And at that time, it was approaching close to $500 billion a year just on interest on this debt. Now it's almost $600 billion interest on the debt. So obviously, our budgeting process is not working because we don't do it anymore. I just think the politicians don't want to have a budget because they don't want to be held accountable. So anyway, that's a chapter. I wrote a chapter on taxes. And,
well, Bill, before you go any further, let me ask you these questions. Is there a specific committee, for those who don't know if there is or not, that actually oversees the budget and the government? And is that what they're paid for to do with their tax, with our tax dollars, if true? And what about the double taxation? Because I think Social Security is a double taxation, and on retirement money that belongs to the people, and they try to make it sound as if it's an entitlement, which they've been stealing for decades now, and that's why they keep saying there's not going to be any Social Security in 2035 or 50 or whatever, and they've never replaced that money. Which doesn't belong to the government. It belongs to we the people as a retirement fund, a government retirement fund paid with our own earnings that was mandated taken out of our checks. In the beginning it wasn't, but it was afterwards when they start seeing the how much money they were collecting, I guess, and they could use it and divert it. So I believe that's double taxation because they also tax the seniors and the elderly on their Social Security, and there's other double taxation. So with all this money, that trillions that have been flowing in over the decades, and there's no accountability for it, and every second it keeps going up, 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 up the national debt. So what is the difference between the budget and the national debt? And is there a committee that is supposed to be doing their job?
Yeah, well, the House of Representatives, the People's House, is really responsible for submitting the budget And then it goes to the Senate, and the Senate approves it, and then it's sent to, and then between the House and the Senate, they work out, you know, their differences. And then it goes to the president to approve, and he can either sign it or he can veto it. So what's really happening there is we're not doing this. So now the president, the executive branch, they come up with what they want to have in the budget, and then it goes to the Senate and the House, and somehow they work out, you know, a way of amending the budget. So that's what the continuing resolutions are. They're just amending the same old budget that went way back. So if they say, well, we want to add 7% to last year's money that we spent, if one party says, no, let's make it 5%, the other party will say, oh, you're cutting it by 2%. You're cutting everybody out. You know, that means the seniors won't get their Social Security or whatever. And you brought up Social Security. So that's interesting because I also have a chapter on that. And what's happening with Social Security is that was really supposed to be like a special fund, a retirement fund. And of course, then they added the medical aspect to it, the Medicare. But in any case, the money just went into the general funds. And so the Congress, they just spend it like it was just, everyday revenue. And so our Social Security ends up being spent just along with everything else. And that leads into taxation again. And so how do they collect the money from Social Security? Well, back in 1935 when they enacted this law. By the way, it wasn't originally going to be called the Social Security. They had quite an 8-month battle over what they were actually going to call this, because Roosevelt, who was president at that time, was afraid that it was going to sound like socialism, because they knew it was socialism. They just thought, we have to cover this up in such a way that we present to the people, make it sound like it's something that's really good for them. And it was only supposed to be like 1%. Well, now we know that it's really 15.3%. It's just that the employees only pay half of that, and the employer pays half. But when the employer pays half, that's just money that they can't pay the employees. So really, the employees pay an additional 15.3% tax for Social Security. And who are we giving it to? We're giving it to everybody, not just the people who pay into it. So that's a big problem as well.
Well, Bill, there's a big problem, because I just read that they're going to, or at least they're alleging that, I have to be careful, alleging in the news that they're thinking about, hopefully they haven't done it, but you know how crazy the government is and how favorable they are to 35 million illegals in our country, not to us, but to them. And they want to take our money, our retirement funds, and they want to give it to the illegals, send them all checks. What do you think about that? I mean, we're natural born Americans who we all grew up, if you live, you're born in this country, since at least the new millennium generations may not understand if they're under 30, but that you actually were told to do chores if you wanted to earn money and earn the value of the money and savings and save for what you wanted for something special. And maybe your parents would help you with the balance. But we learned how to work. We learned to figure out things like building a lemonade stand and, how to build it and how to sell and how to earn money and how to save money. And you were more protective because you had to earn it. And that was like a little entrepreneur type of exercise for children, and using their brains and their minds, mowing lawns and and all sorts of different things, babysitting and blah, blah, blah. But today, the entitlement that young people have growing up with, they get out of college and they want a $100,000 job, you know, to be paid $100,000 a year with no experience. And they want $20 an hour to flip burgers while they're going through school or working part-time. Well, I mean, how did this all change to such a drastic measure where we went from learning how to work and the value of work and earning money and keeping our borders secure and allowing legal immigrants to come into our country so we aren't dominated by one religion or one race or one ethnicity, but everybody gets an opportunity by coming legally here, and we know who they are and identify them, and they're coming here to assimilate. How did all that disappear, Bill? It's gone.
Well, I'm old enough to have an opinion on this. Now, whether I'm accurate or not, I don't know, but I think I am. In the 1940s and 1950s, people bought everything with cash. There were some revolving credit cards with department stores or something like that, but credit was really an unusual thing. And so if somebody bought a house or a car, you really had to provide the information that you were financially competent to pay off those debts. And they were very strict about credit. And so everything else people bought, they paid cash for, and they used cash. Then pretty soon, I guess the banking industry realized that, boy, there's a lot of money to be made by issuing credit to people and collecting interest off of this money that we've found. And this gets to another chapter I wrote on the Federal Reserve, because I think we should eliminate the Federal Reserve. So the Federal Reserve has taken, you know, it manages or administers the currency of the country. The Congress is supposed to do that. They turn that over to the Federal Reserve in 1913. But in any case, as credit became more available, pretty soon we started spending money that we didn't have. And that's exactly what the government is doing today. They're spending money that they don't have. So our national debt has grown from where it was back around 100 years ago, was maybe $1 billion, to now it's $31.5 trillion. That's the national debt. Now, the deficit is how much revenue does the country receive through taxation and other avenues each year, and then how much money do we actually spend? So let's say the country collects in taxation and other fees and avenues of revenue somewhere around $5 trillion a year. But if we spend $6 trillion a year, that means we're operating with a $1 trillion budget, and I mean deficit, and that deficit then adds on to the national debt. So let's go back to somewhere around 2010, which is, 13 years ago. We had a national debt of around $10 trillion. Well, now, look what's happened over the Obama administration, the Trump, and now the Biden administration. We're running deficits of $5 and $6 trillion a year, and that's how we got up to $31.5 trillion. Now, we have to pay interest on that because we borrow that money. This is just not a line item. This is actual money that we borrowed. And who do we borrow it from? Well, we borrow a lot of it from China. How do they do that? They buy our treasury notes, and other people buy, as citizens, we can buy different bonds and stocks, in the country. And so anyway, just think if you take 560 or 70 trillion billion dollars, it's billions with a B, and pay that in interest, what could we do with that? Why, we could repave in every highway in the country. We could build new airports. We could build new internet infrastructure. We could do all kinds of things and have money left over, but we're wasting that money. Just like if I have a credit card that I've maxed out and I got to pay off hundreds or thousands of dollars a month to the bank on interest, I get nothing. I receive nothing from that. All I did was I got the money initially that they gave me, and now I spent it, and now I have to pay the interest on it. So I'm paying maybe three and four times for what I for something I bought. Let's say I buy an item for $100 and I buy it on interest, and I can't make the payment, so I'm paying interest. I might end up spending $500 on that $100. Well, that's exactly what the country's done.
I think, Bill, we have to look at the outsourcing that they did under the Clinton, Holder, and I don't know, whoever, Reno.
Yeah, that was in the 1990s.
Administration. That was a total nightmare, and I used to call into ABC all the time and complain about it and say I think it was a big mistake, that it's going to hurt our country. And, I mean, so many businessmen called in and disagreed with me, of course. And I mean, I wasn't even involved in all this stuff at the time. And I was like, I mean, I could see – you know, that, you know, just inspiration, let's say, looking at the big picture, you're sending our intellectual property, you're sending our jobs, our manufacturing companies, so you can use slave labor over in communist China, make them wealthy, and eventually to the point where they're going to be a threat, a national threat to us, because they've always had their eye on conquering America, just like the Middle East, just like, you know, those two basically, maybe Russia too. I don't think about Russia that much, but those two, and because they've actually made threats over the years against America and communism and a specific law I won't mention because it's such a touchy thing on the internet now. You know, they have such restrictions on their people. I mean, you don't have due process of law. In America, we're losing due process of law, and I stand up and I write all the time, Bill, how important it is for those four words, due process of law, that the framers put into the Constitution, that the NDAA law took away from J6 arrestees. And that was another dangerous law I fought against under the Obama and Holder administration, because I knew that it would target Americans like the Patriot Act too. And that meant that it took away the Miranda rights too, where you wouldn't be able, they didn't want you to, they denied you, and they said you were a domestic terrorist. That and charge you with under the NDA law and the Patriot Act, you no longer have due process of law. You no longer have a phone call. You no longer have access to anyone, and even a lawyer. And maybe maybe you're just going to rot in a jail cell, because how are you going to get justice if you don't have due process of law and Miranda rights? I just see such a threat to our freedom, liberty, and rights in this country. And I don't care what anybody thinks. I'm going to speak up for it and speak out, which I've been doing forever. And, of course, people don't have to listen. They don't have to listen. But one day when they can no longer listen to any stations like this or any shows like this who are trying to encourage them to get involved on the city, the county, the state level, in the school, if they have children. Know what is happening in your cities, your counties, your states, because if you can change a state and keep it free and keep liberty and rights and your constitutional rights and your children protected from all the corrupt laws are making against children now and parents. It's so scary, Bill. What do you think?
Yeah, I agree. Going back to what you brought up about outsourcing, that's really one of our biggest problems, and that happened in the 1990s when all of a sudden our businesses saw that, well, they could get something made cheaper in China or Mexico or the Philippines or India or wherever, cheaper than in the United States. So this whole outsourcing thing started, which started destroying our manufacturing sector. So what's happening in America is we're a consumer-driven country where we don't produce anything, and eventually this is like a house of cards that's going to fall, because we spend a lot of money on restaurants and fast food and things like that. That's all consumerism, that we buy and it's a one-time thing and it's done. The same way with we spend so much money on cell phones and the internet and cable TV and everything like that. Nothing is produced there. There's nothing manufactured. It's just all services. So we've become a service-oriented economy, and we've allowed the rest of the world to make things for us. Well, if we don't make anything, we don't really have anything here in the country that we can rely on. So we have to buy everything from the outside. So that money leaves the United States and goes to someplace else in the world, which further destroys our economy. So yeah, this is a big problem. Now the really big problem is this: we gave away, for example, our rights, and this was under Clinton, to mine and process rare earth materials. And I wrote a chapter on this in my book. Rare earth minerals are those, they're very abundant, but they're difficult to process. And so that went to China. And those are the materials that are used in making all of our electronic equipment, like our cell phones and TV sets. Everything is all done through rare earth minerals. And so if China cuts us off, eventually we won't have anything. They're the ones who make the chips. The Taiwanese make our semiconductors. If we get cut off from those supplies, we're going to be a third world country that's equivalent to living in the caveman age, because we won't have anything. And there's so many things. Our medicines are all bought from India and China. If that supply is cut off, we're getting to a point now where citizens can't get various medicines that they're prescribed to them.
Well, the thing is, Bill, that the outsourcing was a moneymaker for everyone else, including the third world countries like China and Taiwan. They actually are, as far as the microchips go, they actually produce more than China. And that's why China wants Taiwan, in my opinion. And they want Taiwan and to control Taiwan, because they want to control all of those microchips and semiconductors or whatever, and that control our internet now and our phones and our communication. Now imagine if our communication shut down now, because the idiots in government, excuse me, but all the idiots in government who were so egotistical and so concerned about money and not concerned about our nation and the American people have left us while they, live in their little mansions and jet around and stuff, or their big mansions, and they jet around and stuff, and they care less. They care less about the people, and they forgot that they are the people, and they are part of the we, the people, and that their pedestals can be knocked down too, and they could come back down to earth and figure out, hey, what did we do? If God so chooses, I don't wish anything bad on anyone, of course. I mean, God bless them if they accomplished whatever they wanted to accomplish. But if it's based on greed, that's a problem for the American people, because this country was built on greed. Native American citizens and others were wiped out, their tribes, over the years for land and water, as still happening to them today, and for water rights and oil and land, because they had rich soil and stuff. And it's happening to the farmers. I mean, so everything that we think happened in the past is actually hitting America today. And I'm just like, well, how far are we going to allow this to continue on when, if the greed continues and the egos and people don't start, and they've kicked God out of the schools and the country and prayer, and they, you know, only Christianity, though, the only religions they actually target in America right now, along with all the communist nations, is Christians and Catholics. That is absolutely a little stunning to me, that on U.S. soil, which we are innate to because we're natural-born Americans, and we are the only people in the world they cannot deport. Any other immigrant or naturalized American who violates certain laws in our country, we can deport them back to their country. I don't care if they're here legally, if they're from another country, but no one can deport a natural-born American, because this is our homeland. We own our homeland, and they've been giving it away, Bill. So what do you think about that?
Have.
And they've given a lot of it away to China.
Yeah, that another chapter in my book is on immigration, and I not only talked about three of immigration, but and the background of it in each one of my chapters, but I gave a statistical analysis on immigration, for example, or if it's the chapter on education, it's on education, and then did a kind of like a root cause analysis. So I approached it from a business point of view, but I tried to do it in such a way that, you know, people would understand, just like we're talking today. And then I came up with solutions, and I have a perfect solution for the immigration situation that we're going through today, but neither one of the political parties want to resolve this. The Democrats want it because they think that it can change the demographics of the country to a point where they'll be able to vote themselves into every position, elected position there is in the future. And the Republicans are looking at it like, hey, you know, this is good for business. You know, it's cheap labor. So illegal immigration is really going to be is helping to destroy our sovereignty right now. And it's going to continue to do that as long as we continue to have people coming across our borders. And so there again. So anyway, I wrote this book, and I got a chapter. You know, there are so many things that we could talk about. For example, we could do a whole issue on one chapter, which is called the United Nations. And in the chapter United Nations, the subtitle of that is get the U.S. out of the U.N. and get the U.N. out of the U.S. I don't even want them on our property. Send them, you know, let them go someplace else, to The Hague or Nigeria or wherever they want to go. But
Bill, I read that it was China who actually created the United Nations. And if you think about it, because I've always said that too, get the U.N. out of the U.S. and the U.S. out of the USA. And the thing is that most of those countries are third world countries. We're a minority in the United Nations, and yet they're doing business on our soil and making all these decisions. And the United Nations, the real serious part about it now, is that billionaire we all know, Billy Boy, he's involved with the United Nations and the WHO, World Health Organization, which he funds, and they want to take over our country.
Yeah, the WHO, the World Health Organization, is actually a department or a part of the United Nations. So, when I wrote this entire chapter on the United Nations, I also did a lot of research on how much money we're giving to the United Nations, but also the money that we're giving out to all these other countries that we pay bribes to, because that's really what we're doing. You know, like we send $2 billion a year to Egypt. We're really just bribing Egypt to be on our side. So anyway, what happens is, and I got all this down, that we vote when we propose something or we're for something in the United Nations, 80% of the time the rest of the nations vote against the U.S. So if you think about it, we're paying all this money to keep these people our friends and bribe them, I guess, or they would vote 100% against us all the time. So if there's something we're for, they're against it 80% of the time. So why are we in this organization, and why are we paying all this money? It makes no sense at all. And actually, the United Nations was really, this whole thing started back around 1918. It was called the League of Nations. And the Senate at that time voted unanimously not to join it. So we never were part of the League of Nations, which eventually during World War II completely fell apart. So after World War II, the United Nations got started. And that's when they, I think it was one of the Rockefellers or somebody donated the land in New York City to build the United Nations building there and bring it here. And then it started out that way. And so what happened was they started out with a Security Council of 15 members, and the Security Council really governs everything. So that's a rotating membership. So, like, for example, if Russia is in charge of the Security Council for that month, you can imagine how favorable they're going to act towards the United States of America, you know, which they're not. So anyway, we shouldn't be in that.
It's ridiculous if the majority of Americans, you know, do not want the United Nations meeting in our country. And since there's so many countries now who are against us and coming against us, and they come to these meetings at the United Nations, then they should move the United Nations meetings to a foreign nation where they're all together and just leave us alone and fund themselves. Because if you think about it, you know, like oil for food, where that was a huge bribe and the people got no food.
Yep.
But the leaders got our money. I mean, how many times has this been happening where we're sending billions of dollars to all these countries, and yet we see the people being made homeless, and they're starving to death, and their water isn't clean. I mean, it goes on and on and on. The people are still poor is what I'm saying.
Yeah, absolutely. So, you know, we've just, as a country, we've gotten ourselves embedded in so many of these issues. And really, the government should not be involved in these things. What the government is really for is to protect the United States from foreign enemies, and to protect and keep the citizens safe. And we're not supposed to be in the business of taking care of people's education or their medical issues or, you know, whatever it might be. They're not supposed to.
Well, when you think about it, Bill, when you think about it, we're talking to Bill Muckler. And Bill Muckler wrote a great book, 2020 Vision, A Clear Vision of America. And he's a wealth of information. But what we're talking about is that, we get married and we have children and they have children. But what the government has done is they said, you're not just going to support your own family. You need to work twice as hard to pay more taxes because we're going to increase your taxes, because now you're going to take care of 35 million more people who don't even belong in this country, were born in this country, came here illegally, and we're going to give them illegal driver license. We're going to give them illegal Social Security. We're going to give them illegal jobs. We're going to give them illegal phones. We're going to give them illegal housing and food and shelter. And you are now going to pay for their families, and they don't believe in abortions and contraceptives. They have large families. So they're going to procreate in this country, so you're going to pay for their babies, you're going to pay for their Obamacare, you're going to pay for everything. And the American females who want to have millions of abortions, a million abortions every year, you're going to pay for them too, because they don't take contraceptives either and protect themselves and be responsible, so they don't create a baby they don't want. But if they do all these mistakes, which is about a million a year, you're going to pay for them. But not just them, Bill. In Obamacare, it says that we are going to pay for abortions worldwide. So this is, you know, when you ask about how are we going to balance a budget and a national debt that's into the trillions, we can't, can we?
No, we really can't. And we've allowed this whole thing to become so out of control that it's going to be very difficult to bring it back. But it can be done. And we saw some glimmer of that when Trump was elected president, and he came up with the America First idea, and his slogan was Make America Great Again, which was, I thought, you know, he just took what I said. I said I wanted to restore American exceptionalism, and he made it easier to say by saying Make America Great Again. So they're exactly the same thing. It's just a lot easier to put on a cap the way he said it. But in any case, all these issues have all been caused by the people that we elect. We just have to quit electing the people who want to become career politicians. That's another thing I wrote about, term limits. We need to have term limits, because we've got people that have been in Congress for 36 to 50 years. I mean, how can they have any touch or any feeling or understanding of what the American people go through if all they've done is work for the government all their life? Guys like Biden and Schumer, they've never had a job in their lives. All they've ever done is work for the government. So, you know, and we see what happens with that.
Oh, there's lots of them on both sides of the aisle that have been in politics forever and ever. But I think it's not their fault. I think it's the fault of the American people, because the American people, you know, elect the same people over and over and over. It's like in Hollywood, you know, I mean, I do the same thing. If I know certain movie stars in a movie, I know it's going to be a good movie, so I'm going to watch it, you know. And and you're kind of like, oh, I don't know about that movie because I've never heard of that person. So it's kind of like that, you know, where you get used to people and you know who they are and what they're doing. And the American people are kind of lackadaisical about that. You know, they're like, oh, well, you know, he's, you know, this or that or whatever. So they keep voting this, because I think that we're not proposing laws and enforcing laws that say, you know, after so many years, let's say 12 years, you have to leave politics and give it to somebody else to serve their country. Do you think that the framers intended for more people, citizens, to be able to serve their country for a certain amount of time and then pass the baton on to the next person?
No, the elected officials were supposed to be part-timers. Benjamin Franklin, for example, in Philadelphia, proposed in the Philadelphia legislature that no one could serve more than 4 out of 7 years, and the other 3 years they had to go on vacation. That was his words, go on vacation. So, they never presumed that anybody, or even thought that anybody, would want to make a career out of being a politician. George Washington didn't even want to be president. They almost had to talk him into it. they tried to make him king, and he said he wouldn't do it. You know, so yeah, this is something that's evolved over the past 100 years, where people have become career politicians, and it hasn't worked for America, because look at the national debt. We have $31.5 trillion, $600 billion a year in interest payments, 50 million illegal immigrants living in the country. Half three is on some kind of government subsistence. 63% of our work participation rate is 63%. Of all the people who are eligible to work, only 63% of them work. And so what does the government do? They come up and say, well, our unemployment rate is only 5%. Well, that's BS. It's not 5%. It's 37%.
Well, that's because most of the government employees in Congress and the Senate and in high positions are lawyers. So we know what they say about lawyers. So it really is a country being run by lawyers.
who have two basic skills, fundraising and speech making.
And they all want to be actors, so that was the closest thing they could come to, is acting in the court. who can put on the greatest show, you know? And judges are lawyers, prosecutors are lawyers, attorney generals are lawyers, district attorneys are lawyers, public defenders are lawyers, presidents are lawyers, and then they get a vice president that's a lawyer, appoint them. I mean, United States attorney general is a lawyer. I mean, you can go on and on. They're all lawyers.
Yep, exactly.
How can we as the people, you know, go up against the American Bar Association and the Brotherhood? It's a tough situation. So you have to be more offensive than defensive, I think, and you have to use your head and be more creative and figure out. Because I proposed a lot of laws since over the past 30 years to legislators, and they actually implemented them. They liked them, and they implemented them. And so it can be done. It's just that people are so busy trying to survive, and that, you know, between the cost of living and the gasoline, and they're telling you they're going to take your gas guzzling car away from you, they're going to take your gas stove away from you. I mean, it's like, what? I paid for that. You can't take that. I mean, it's gotten insane here, you know, and oh my gosh. But anyway, Bill, we've come to the end. It's been great talking to you, Bill Muckler, and now's your time to shine. You can leave any message you like for our audience, and you can also repeat the name of your book and also where they can buy them.
It's 2020, A Clear Vision for America. And, I think one thing that could help the country is if everybody would read my book, they would really get a better understanding of how things work. And it's not that I'm that brilliant that I know all this. It's just I've done the research, and all the information I got, I took it all from the government web pages. So, you know, it's not like things that I made up. But when people, if people read a chapter in my book, they say, boy, I really understand how this works, you know. So anyway, that's what I'm hoping for, 2020, Clear Vision for America. And I wrote a follow-up called 2020, A Clear Vision for Our Future, which is about restoring our Constitution and reclaiming our country and fixing our culture. And so it has some interesting chapters like American Lives Matter and Christian Lives Matter, which would give everybody a better understanding of what's happening there. And I'm on Facebook, I'm on Twitter, and if you just go to Bill Muckler, you can even Google me, and I'll pop up on there. So, and thank
well,
you so much,
fantastic, Bill. And we'll have you back again to talk about your other book as well. So you have a blessed day, and thank you for all your hard work. Keep it up.
Okay, thank you so much for the opportunity to talk about America with you, Rose. Bye bye.
Always a pleasure. Bye-bye. And That's all we have time for, folks. But remember, injustices can happen to you and they can happen to me. But together, we can make a positive difference. Remember that you are never alone when you tune in to Colombo Chronicles every Wednesday at noon.
Obamasaurus, the new book by Rose M. Colombo, is an updated version of a political satire that reflects the political roadmap of today's world. Written with an Orwellian twist, will humanity survive or suffer depopulation or extinction? Obamasaurus by Rose M. Colombo, available at Amazon.com.
Well, my friends, time flies, and now is the time to say goodbye. Thanks so much for being part of the Colombo Chronicles family. You are appreciated. Please do it now. Bookmark. Push that like, share, and follow button. Oh, and don't forget to comment below and stay in touch. Make your family part of the Colombo family. Until next Wednesday at noon, remember, God loves you, and so does the Rose.